Good morning. This is Les Harms on behalf of the Adams County Historical Society, welcoming you to another segment of Adams County History. On our last Moment in Time, I related interviews that had been done with survivors of the polio scare during the middle of the 20th century. With no known vaccine available, the word polio struck fear into many people. On the last broadcast, I related a number of personal testimonials of polio survivors and how polio affected their lives, from severe paralysis to the very last lasting effects. Fear ran rampant with no known cause and no known vaccine. Well, paralysis from polio differed from other types of paralysis, such as the spinal cord injuries. The polio virus attacked the nerves of the spine and cut off the impulse from the brain to the muscles. But the sensory neurons, which sense touch and pressure and heat, cold and pain, were not affected. So one author said it would be much like putting your hand on a hot stove, feeling the pain, but you were unable to pull your hand away. Well, in the 1930s, a new treatment was perfected for patients that are unable to breathe on their own. It was called the iron lung. The device was a large metal cylinder that encased the patient's entire body. The affected person lay flat on his back with a cot-like slab with his head protruding out of the cylinder. A rubber collar surrounded the neck to prevent the air from escaping, while alternating positive and negative pressure created a push-pull motion on the chest. So in 1941, the Hastings Kiwanis Club launched a fund drive to raise $1,400 to purchase the first iron lung for Adams County. At the height of the epidemic in 1952, as many as three of the big machines were in use in a single room at Mary Lanning Hospital. But the iron lung was not a cure. It simply kept the patient alive when he was unable to breathe on his own, and the apparatus itself could be very, very daunting. Polio patients at Mary Lanning Hospital were all housed in the basement. When the iron lung was active, it could be heard throughout the ward. The sounds of the rhythmic, mechanical bellows stayed with Shirley Gozo Harms. She later related, "In the back of my mind, I can still hear those iron lungs pumping. That sound was an unrelenting sound. There's nothing like it. You realize that people are being kept alive by the iron lung. You almost end up listening for fear that the sound was going to stop." End of her quotation. Dr. Clyde Klieger, former surgeon at Mary Lanning, recalls the polio epidemic well, and he states, "We had so many iron lungs going at once at Mary Lanning, we couldn't pull enough electricity to pour all of them." And another nurse, Leota Rolls, states, "The last time in Hastings the iron lung was used was when a visiting family had a paralyzed polio survivor needed to be placed in the machine to sleep at night." Well, although it was done in not all cases, the gold standard to make a diagnosis of polio was a spinal tap. It involved putting a needle into the spinal column to collect a sample of cerebrospinal fluid. Gary Stumbo tried to forget his spinal tap experience, but he still remembers when the doctor missed with a needle twice before finally hitting the mark on the third try. Such was the life of a polio patient. Finally, the physical therapy department at Mary Lanning Hospital began in response to the polio epidemic. Mel Marks, the hospital's first full-time physical therapist, was hired in September of 1952 just to work with the polio patients. Several large private donations were made so they could equip the new department. In fact, the citizens of Kennesaw donated $4,300 in a community fund drive to try to help with the polio epidemic. The achievements of former polio patients that were interviewed for this particular time reflect a can-do attitude. 18 months after his last bicycle ride, Larry Becker was able to stand on his own again and eventually to walk a short distance. He never did regain the use of his arms and his hands, but months of rehabilitation taught him to make the most of what he had. He learned to write, and he could type 20 words a minute with his feet. He graduated from Midland University and earned a doctoral degree in philosophy from the University of Chicago. He was able to make something of his life. Steve Einsel was also determined not to let the polio get him down. Some children at school called him Squeaky because of his noisy leg braces, so he always carried a can of 3-in-1 oil in his back pocket. Other local stories were equally inspiring. Polio hampered Genevieve Ground Conway's right side, but like every Nebraska teenager, she wanted to drive. So at that time, all cars had manual transmissions and required 2 feet. Her cousin jury-rigged a 1941 Chevrolet so that the clutch and the brake were operated by 1 foot. Genevieve states, "I drove that car a long time, and I never did have an accident." Loreen Bloom attended Nebraska College of Commerce in 1940, located on the third floor of the Magic Building. And for over a year, she got a ride from a neighbor in the morning, navigated the stairs with her leg brace, and then would walk the 18 blocks back to her home in the evening. Wayne Strasburg farmed full-time as long as he could, but when his post-polio problems became too much for the late 1960s, he had to get a chance at a different job. So he got an accounting degree and began a second career at Roseland Co-op Elevator. He said, "I had to work twice as hard as the other people just to maintain the same particular level." Well, in August of 1955, the first shipment of Salk vaccine arrived in Adams County. It was a banner event. In fact, the Hastings Daily Tribune ran a photograph under the headline, "Life-Saving Fluid in a Small Bottle." This first vaccine shipment was used to vaccinate all the first and the second graders in the county. Cheryl Stumble Lockwood, whose brother contracted polio, remembers her mother being terrified of those shots, probably because she thought I might get polio from them. In 1962, the Sable vaccine was released. The Adams County Medical Society joined a national event called SOS, Sabin Oral Sunday, a time when people across the nation gathered to drink the liquid vaccine. And on June 11th of 1962, over 13,000 Adams County residents received the initial dose of Sabin vaccine at the Hastings City Auditorium. Polio raised the curtain for an ugly encore. Many victims who fought the hard battle as children and young adults had to train their other muscles so that they could make them work to do things. But reflecting on polio, Shirley Gozo Harms concluded in her last statement, "It was the cancer of its day. I hope we don't relax the vigilance that's needed to keep it eradicated." End of quote. Here ends this segment of Adams County history. So, this moment in time has been a presentation of the Adams County Historical Society. We invite you to listen, to learn, and to please consider joining our society in order that we might preserve the history of our county. You can also visit our website, adamshistory.org. And so, once again, this is Les Harms inviting you to tune in on the second and the fourth Friday of each month. Thank you for listening.